Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, 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 everybody. How are you all? Welcome to this fine weekend. It is, I don't know the damn day. What is the day? Today is the 18th of November. We are less than a week away from Thanksgiving. Gobble, gobble, turkey, turkey. If you are one to celebrate that day, it is just a couple ticks away on the calendar. We're going to have a robust discussion today about student achievement or underachievement, I should say. So we broached this subject a couple of weeks ago, and I had to pull back from it because I knew we were going to come back to it with a more full panel. So we have that today for you all. My cousin's going to join. I have two young ladies scheduled to join us. Camilo's going to be on with us. Rashi's here. Obviously, Thomas is going to be here. And we're going to get into that subject. To start off today, though, please, I ask for a moment of silence and a prayer because I damn sure need it. I've worked 10 of the past 11 days at both jobs. I got about 3 hours of sleep, 3.5 hours of sleep last night, maybe a little more, not much. I got on the road this morning and drove up to Richmond. So I'm sitting in Richmond, Virginia, waiting to complete the show so that I can then mosey on over for my niece, whom is having her baby shower today. It's her first kid. She and my son are the same age. My youngest. They're the same age. She actually turns 28 right about a month, and he'll be 28. Next year, January. So they're like a month and like 2 weeks apart, some crap like that. But anyhow, she said she wanted me here, so I made it through. And I promise you, God is good because, I was hurting when I laid down last night. When I woke up, I was like, man, this is some bullshit. But look, it ain't over because 2 weeks from now? Is it 3 weeks? 3 weeks from now, I got to go to Tampa because my other niece is graduating college. So, hey, man, the things that we do for these gals in our lives, I promise you, it is not an understatement at all. I'm sorry, I clicked on the wrong person. Clicked on the general. It's not an understatement at all as the sacrifices that we make for these folks in our lives. But it's a beautiful situation. Coming through this week, it's been pretty quiet. You know, like I said, just been grinding it out, man. And I'm looking around, and at the part time, I'm noticing the conversations that I'm having with the majority of the cats that are there, and the vast majority of us are part time. There's some that are full time, but the vast majority are part time, and you hear these conversations. This cat that's been there for 10 years, 15 years. And one cat, he says, man, my wife he's on me all the time about quitting the job. But, bro, you when that check come in, he be like, maybe you can stay a little longer. You know it's good money. It's easy money. It affords us the opportunity to do a number of things. So, you know, there it is. I'm thinking about that as a whole, especially as the holiday season approaches. And, you know, the economy's been tough. It's been tough for a whole lot of people. Things seem to be turned a little bit. Reports are coming out that mortgage rates fell yet again. The CEO from Walmart was just saying that the height of the crisis is over, inflation is over, and he's concerned now that stores are about to encounter deflation. And I don't know if you are a bulk club member or not, BJ's, Sam's, Costco, or Dunn Freakin', but I got my Sam's Club booklet yesterday, and the booklet for Costco was in at the same time. And I'm flipping through the pages, and I'm noticing that large screen televisions are dirt cheap, and I mean dirt cheap. Now, that's twofold for that. Obviously, we know that there's some backlog from the pandemic still, and 8K is about to come. So most televisions now are 4K, but 8K is on the horizon. I think 8K more than likely will be launched right before the Super Bowl. So all these folks that are running out buying televisions now because they're dirt cheap are going to turn back around and try to get another television because it's going to be 8K versus 4K. And then all the advertisement about 8K and how much better 8K is going to come out. So when you look at things like that, when you think about how money has been tough to get a hold of and or to hold on to because, you know, that bill situation just, it's not cute. It's just not pretty. Why do you have to pay the same bills every month and, like, on time? How that work, Rashi? How you get a cell phone bill every month? You get a cable bill. The cable company is gangster. Oh, okay. Well, the cable company is gangster.
You got it. Okay. Hey, Lee, we're about to... Most of these young people didn't figure it out. They have streamlined a digital, you know, reality down to what really matters. And that phone bill literally is it. It is their internet. Uh-huh. It is their phone. All the streaming happens on the phone. And so most young people have boiled their compound bills down to something that can happen on their phone. In Kenya, though, you don't have to pay. You don't have to pay every month. You keep paying up on it like you're paying them old. Remember how our cell phone used to be? You put the time on there. You had to go get the card, and the card put the time on there. Yeah, you don't want to pay every month? Fine. Just be responsible for keep spring-loading your account with the necessary credits in order to run it as per your. And they know you're going to look up and one day and your license is going to be off because you forgot to put the credits on there. Or your phone, you're going to try to make the call and you're going to make a 10-minute call with 6 minutes worth of credits. What they have recognized is that the human brain ain't capable of maintaining some stuff, you know, regularly. And so they call themselves doing it for us. But it costs, though. It's such a costly endeavor to have other people be in control of regulating your behavior, you know? But I don't do it. I don't have a phone bill. My phone only works when I'm around the internet and my job phone in my classroom. I no longer pay, because I was up to $250 a month for me and my son's phone. And I do the same amount of stuff now with it, with zero bill, that I was doing with the bill. I still listen to my iPhone too. I still listen to my iTunes. I use the Google Voice is all you need. Google Voice is free.
Well,
and if you don't want to call that, it's like five different free phones. WhatsApp is free. Some other stuff. Well, they got a.
How you doing the internet? How you doing that?
Now, look, between Tubi, First of all, there's YouTube. YouTube is a free video source, and most people have not got caught by YouTube, so they didn't upload it some TV stuff on there. You know what I'm saying? You can watch. I watched Cat Williams' brand new special that he did on. You know, somebody had almost floor tickets, and I just saw Cat Williams' whole new special on YouTube. YouTube is Tubi.
Yeah, but how you doing your Wi-Fi though?
Freeform.
Who you paying?
How do I do what?
How you doing your Wi-Fi? Who you paying for your Wi-Fi?
Okay, now that's the power. Pay
okay.
for your Wi-Fi. You got everything mm-hmm. else. Now I'm Google Fiber. They got it down to $100. But
go.
If I go broke,
okay.
and you show them the form you get from the state, like you know when the state
mm-hmm.
start helping you. They bust that down
mm-hmm.
to $50 to $70. They
okay.
attenuate that based on your income. So,
I was going to say, I used T-Mobile Home previous, and T-Mobile Home was pretty good, and that's only like $50 a month.
Smart. If you link your cell phone internet with your hotspot Wi-Fi or whatever, Rob, you got it. That's the one thing AT&T found out that had made some sense. With that U-verse and all that other stuff, that if you
mm-hmm.
link their bills together, if you link humans' bills together, you had a better propensity for them to pay it, you know. So, yes, if your phone is your internet, that's super, super smart. But all you need is the internet. Your internet and the power and the water. And why do I say that? Because if you do your house right, you got space heaters and stuff. You don't need gas. You can get an electric stove. We can remove natural gas usage from our homes. And honestly, you can turn that power solar. You invest in panels. You create more power than you use. You sell your power back to the grid.
I agree with that one.
If you got your phone, you know, you get your internet down. If you get a good internet, that powers the phone. I'm doing it right now. If you go back there like the man told us yesterday, like he told us yesterweek, if you stop trying to grow roses and turn that soil and put some damn cucumber in there and squash and this and that, you don't have to go to the store like that no more either. Okay?
You
run that line in the back of that yard.
Demetrius,
you don't have to burn that dryer no more. You can put them clothes right there in the sun. Kansas City got up to 75, and it's the middle of November.
Girl, what you talking about? Oh, you smelling good too? That Christmas of them clothes
okay.
coming off that damn laundry line. Oh man,
it's conveniently convenience is running our pockets into the ground. Convenience, and it started with fast food, in my opinion. We was able to drive up, get it, drive off. Oh, what you do that for? It ain't nothing we don't want to drive up for no more. We used to have to get out and talk to the dope man. Now we can pull up to the dope man's side window, and they pushing dope out the side. You don't even have to get out your car to buy alcohol no more. You can drive up and buy alcohol. All you got to do is order it as part of your grocery pack, right? You order it with
mm-hmm.
your groceries from Walmart. I would like 2 ears of corn and 4 gallons of McCormick vodka, please. And they drop it right on. You don't even leave the house. They'll bring it to you.
That's true. That is
for
true.
For an extra $30-something. So,
hey,
but,
yeah,
so
that is
the
true.
Convenience of life. The convenience of life is what we pay for, because ain't no because we don't want to be pioneers. We don't want to work like them olden days people did. We don't want to be have that Amish spirit, right? It's convenient.
No, we don't want to put in the effort.
And
we don't want to
in my opinion, you should have to pay for the American way. You pay for the American way.
I don't think that it's
Go
about
ahead, brother,
people sir. Necessarily. Yeah, I don't think it's about people necessarily paying for the effort. I think they're just routine and habits end up becoming addictive. And so you do things, you know, you just do things because it is the way it is. And we got a whole new generation that don't remember the TV without a remote control, that ain't never had to get back and turn the dial, right? They don't know anything about that. And part of the
ain't
problem
never been
is
an antenna.
They never had an antenna. Then we have another generation that don't know what life was like socializing without the internet. So just think about how far we are. We got schools that say, hey, forget about you learning how to write in cursive because you ain't going to never write. Right? What I'm saying? You're going to type that out.
Yeah.
Oh, no need for a spelling test. Why do you need to learn how to spell? We're going to autocorrect everything that you say. Right? And that is the problem. A lot of it is the technology and the consumerism of things that is part of the issue. I don't want to say that people are necessarily volunteering because, Sister Rashi, some things are even being outdated. It's almost like saying, I didn't want to learn Latin. But the reality of it is by the time I started school, they had already pushed Latin out of school. I didn't have the option. And so we're not giving people the options to do some of the analog things or some of the ways that we used to do it ourselves. Instead of you going down shaking somebody's hand and making a deal for a house, or for a business loan, now they want you to do it online. We got a satellite office. Yeah, don't go into the office. That office is just there for people to work. You can just call in over the phone. So a lot of the convenience, in my opinion, is on the side of the corporations, the big corporations, and they have this idea of telling people, let us do it for you. Well, while they're doing it for you, they're going to charge you a surcharge, and they probably are not going to give you the service that you want.
Right.
That's exactly
right.
It.
So, yeah.
You do what somebody else do it for you. What they say, if you want it done right,
do it yourself.
Get your ass up and get about the business of handling it yourself. But we can't do it. We don't have enough time. We don't have enough time to hand wash no damn laundry. Did you ever hand wash your laundry, Lee, on the corrugated?
Oh, hell yeah.
You ain't never did it. I did it.
No,
I didn't do that.
We use the tub, do some laundry detergent in there, took the, you know, you unscrew the handle from the broom, use that as your agitator, and that's how we wash clothes. When it was cold outside, hey, walking outside in that damn cold, do that shit right in the tub.
So hard when you should have had, that's when you had the kids come in and they stomp tub and they stomp on the clothes. See, that children's feet are agitators.
Children's feet. I like that. I never even thought about that. I like that. Brother Barry, that was a good show you all had earlier today. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole with Cassie and Biddy as much. Mm-hmm. That's something we can potentially come back to at a later time. But I do want to acknowledge that money is power. And as you said, and you said it as best as anybody could, you know, you have to be mindful of what you ask for when you're telling folks that you want someone to take care of you and you are willing to give up your power and control to have them come in and do this, that, and the third, because there is going to be an exchange. And that exchange may not be what you want it to be, hence the reason I put in the comment in the chat for you today during the live feed was, you know, you're telling men that they can't take you to certain restaurants. Well, guess what? The restaurants you're telling them they're going to take you to, that's yesterday's price, as Fat Joe said, ain't today's price.
That shit is you ordering from
the other side of the menu. And you ordering from the other side of the menu, that comes with benefits. Like, look at the So we need to go to Capital Grill and Ruth Chris. That's so you telling me that's where I must take you bare minimum on a date. Okay. Ruth Chris Capital Grill money means at the end of this motherfucker, I'm getting some dessert.
Me.
And I ain't talking about nothing on that damn minute.
Did y'all see the mama advocating for her son? You saw it?
Yeah, I said that to me.
About the
I don't
lady,
know if you watched
the lady talking
lead.
About, don't come
they
to my son brain. Trying to get him to feed you for the rest of the week on his income, and you ain't even worth the bread that come for free, okay?
Well, you know,
but
my point is, you know, I've seen men growing up take care of women in the way that these women say they want.
Correct.
And those men that I've seen who do it, they would usually abuse them. And we don't talk about that. And sometimes it's not physical abuse. Sometimes it's emotional and mental abuse. We don't talk about
it. Come on, call it
we
there.
We glamorize.
Call it there.
We glamorize, oh, she had the nice purses. They went on vacations. They did this. And it was like, but at what expense? She was told she wasn't nothing all the time. He was always telling her what he was doing for her. Like, that's what y'all want?
She won a
like,
five. Women.
That's what you
she
want.
Won a five.
And that's fact. But let me also say this, because we've also had the Keke Palmer stuff the last 2 weeks. And what you find out there, in 2017, she writes her own book. And she talks about being abusive to this Darius Jackson cat and how she abused him physically as well as emotionally. Why? Because Sister Rashi, she was paying all the bills. She was taking care of everything. He was a failed actor. He was a nobody. And she told him that every day she took care of him. This is the problem in society when we always ask for somebody to take care of you. You got to learn how – listen, sometimes you got to make the table. But if you can't make the table, bring something to the table, okay? Stabilize the table. Make the table look better. Don't just go sit at somebody else's table and allow them to disrespect you. That's what we're not teaching people.
Can we bridge from that to being inclusive of Sevan Jackson? Now, it came out, and we didn't talk about this when it broke, because he's been talking about this for a while. I don't know why all of a sudden it's breaking news or whatever. But Sevan Jackson called off his wedding. He asked his fiance to sign a prenup. This man paid for the entire wedding. It was the day of the wedding, and she refused to sign the prenup. So he refused to marry her. And literally, they're at the church, and the preacher comes in. It's like, yo, are you serious? Like, you? He said, yeah. Like, I told her what it was going to be. I told her what I needed for her. So now she comes in, again, same day. She comes to him. I'll sign it. He's like, no, you can't sign it now. Because if you sign it now, you're signing it under duress, which voids the prenup. I can't do that. I wouldn't make you do that. That's not smart. That wasn't the point for the prenup. And he had been talking to her about this for a moment, and she just refused to do it. Now she's embarrassed, and she wants to sign. He said no, called it off. This man understood that he didn't want to be in the position of two things, loss and total control. He was like, yo, this protects you and this protects me. She chose to play the game, you know what I'm saying, and he walked away. Very good on him. What you all talked about today via R. Kelly, via Diddy, because you're right, there's a whole lot of stories and reports on Diddy. There's been stories and reports on Diddy over the years about all the foul stuff he's done. And I'm glad you brought up Usher, because Usher said in an interview years ago, I remember this clearly, Usher was asked about his Bad Boy days. And all Usher said was, Bad Boy wasn't just the name of the label. It was real. And that's all he said about those days. And I was like, damn, that's powerful. You know what I'm saying? He was like, the name fit the situation wholeheartedly. It was crazy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously he got out of that. He came out of that with My Way and continued on to grow his success. Diddy,
well,
not too long ago.
He had to go to JD.
Right. Diddy not too long ago released all the masters for, you know, his entire catalog. He gave it back to all the artists. I think that was a preemptive strike to the situation with Cassie. But, you know, who knows what goes on behind closed doors, because there's always your side, his side, and truth. One side.
It's your side,
right.
Side, and the NBA side.
right. So, you know, but the fire literally and figuratively, that I really wanted to go into outside of asking for the prayer for me because I'm tired as hell. The breaking news of the day is Snoop said he's giving up smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe it? Snoop has said that he, after deliberation with his fam, he has decided he's going to give up smoke. Now, I don't know what the hell that means exactly. But
that means he eat the weed now. That means he take edibles now.
Yeah, for real, right. I will say this. I do not know Snoop directly at all. But there's only 3 degrees of separation between me and him because I know one of my cousins knows Warren G. And they actually are really close. And not because of that, but just in general, I've paid attention to Snoop's career since day one. And if you look at him and listen to him now, he's starting to transition into that mogul mode. Once he bought Death Row, he is making some very big moves. You know, snatching it off of all streaming services, building Death Row, building a Death Row app. You know, he was talking about only releasing the music potentially in the metaverse. I mean, he's making some big boy moves. And I think that he's come to the point in his life where he's like, I want to be respected when I walk in these rooms, and I don't want people to look at me as, you know, Snoop Dogg, the rapper, who is a weed head. I want them to look at me as Snoop Dogg, the businessman that's trying to make some moves. You know what I'm saying? And he's done well for himself in music and outside of music. I think he's really just looking to turn that page and fully coming into his own. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. I mean, think about where this kid came from. And all the crap that he's gone through, and if this is in fact the move that he's trying to make, that is a wonderful thing. And I give him props. I give him his flowers. I give him his all due respect. And it's wild that this comes out because yesterday, I don't know why, but I had this strong urging to listen to Bygones Be Bygones. You know what I'm saying? And I remember the first time I heard that song, I cried. I cried the first time I heard it. You know, he really put it in. He put a lot into that damn song. And knowing that whom it was aimed at was even better. You know what I'm saying? The fact that he really dedicated that shit, and the fact that he allow Suge's legacy to come forward publicly to be more than the fights and the shootings and the this and the that and that. The work that Suge did in the community, the work that, you know, he did with the homies, just, you know, literally putting food in people's mouths and keeping roofs over people's heads and, you know, giving them the opportunity to be what they had hoped to be. Now, everybody didn't make it, but at least they had an opportunity to see if they were worth the mustard versus them always sitting around like, man, if I just had a shot. Well, you had your shot, dog. And for whatever reason, it didn't work. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not always going to work. You know, most of us have many iterations of ourselves before we figure out what it is and who it is we really are and what it is we really want to do. You know, you spoke, Brother Barry, about being an entrepreneur. You know, most entrepreneurs fall. They fall 2-3 times before they figure it out. And then they blow up. But that's a part of the process. And to your point earlier, I don't think social media gives folk an opportunity to enjoy the process. I think that they are so caught up on looking good now that they are afraid and or can't handle when they don't look good. So that's what that is. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, man, it's wild. You know, hey, who knows? Hopefully, if this does in fact stick, then that's what that is. But, yep, absolutely.
Hey, man, I'm proud of him from the aspect of, you know, Lee, at some point everybody got to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you see people who do things and you say, well, that's just so-and-so. That person's always been that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
At some point we got to say, yeah, they've always been this way, but they can do better, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is where I feel like we lack so much in our community. It's, this has just been this person, and we're just going to let them, we're going to minimize, this is all you can be. No, brother, you got a chance to be better. Sister, you got a chance to be better. Why don't you go ahead and make yourself better? Because I can see them being tired of smoking weed. To be honest with you, like, you smoke so much, and look at all this weed you smoking. And what is your life really like smoking it consistently? So I don't know. I'm hoping that it's not anything with, like, you know, have cancer or anything like that, because he did ask for his privacy and his family. So I kind of worried about that piece, but I'm happy for him, man. This is the age where we all should be trying to outgrow some of the stuff we used to do, you know?
Absolutely.
But this homie threw him under the bus still, though.
Who? Come on, Chuck. Because he said,
you done with the weed, but are you done with the powwow?
Oh, that was Gossip in the City. That was old girl Fee. Or one of her staff, they did say that. And let me tell you this. I think that the one thing I like about Snoop, and I've been noticing this about the podcasting game, because everything is content until somebody busts you in your mouth. Part of the problem is that people like him ain't going to respond to negative stuff. And so people know they can say it. And I feel like that's part of the issue. Like I saw that piece, but I was thinking to myself, hey, somebody else could have said, I'm going to stop smoking weed today because it's Snoop giving it up. I am. And then you make that comment, and guess what everybody says? Oh, well, weed wasn't the problem. Let me keep smoking. He on powder. You don't know if he on powder or not. Well, because this person said it, now I can keep going with my addiction.
Right.
And that, to me, I feel like that's how we always lose the lessons. It's the sly remarks. It's the punchlines, right? So, yeah, Lee, I saw it. To me, it's a big deal. He's my favorite rapper. I went to California, y'all. I went to California to hear Snoop Dogg. Didn't get a chance to see him 3 years ago because the young rapper Draco the Ruler was murdered. I was looking forward to seeing Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, and 50 Cent on one stage.
Mm-hmm.
50 didn't come out. Snoop didn't come out because of the murder. I saw Q. But my point of saying that is we have to demand, or we should be trying to see each other get better. And I do feel like with the hip-hop culture, especially with reality TV kind of taking over, because I think reality TV is more hip-hop now than actual rappers, if we're being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Reality TV is more hip-hop than the rappers.
And to your point about us getting better, two of our guests are on this morning. I need to respect their time already, so
right,
I want to get into it. Yeah, absolutely. So for you all that don't know, again, I want to remind you that both Rashi and Thomas Berry are educators. Thomas Berry in former iteration of his life, but he'll still get in the classroom and get down if necessary. We started this discussion not too long ago about children underachieving in the classroom, and I wanted to bring the good doctor on. That's my cousin, by the way. I wanted to bring him on because he's an educator out in the far, far left coast. So I definitely wanted to reach out to him. It's always good to talk to him, too. So, it was an excuse. It was an excuse because, you know what I'm saying. But then I wanted to call Joanne and bring her on, too. Hopefully a couple other folks will join us as well to get their input. But mainly I wanted to start by saying welcome to both of you, morning to you, because I know it's super early for you, so I really thank you for getting up for us.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Joe, good morning to you. How you doing, man?
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thank you. All right, so Rashi actually is going to lead this one because she is passionate about it. But I'll start off with the premise. And the premise being, you know, these children are our future leaders. And how has it come to where we are now, where they are just not nearly on grade level with respect to arithmetic and or reading slash reading comprehension? So that's what we really wanted to dive into and have that discussion. All right? So, ladies first. Rashi, what's going on? What do you think this connect is, and how do we get it better?
So let me explain how it plays out. I'm a fifth grade math and science teacher, school that statistically actually had received the best scores for our statewide diagnostics, which is the MAP test. Yeah. So they use those scores. Let's start there. When you start talking about educational achievement and gaps, you can't talk out the side of your neck. You have to have statistical data analysis. As our guests know, data, 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 that's all they say. It's like a robot voice being played over the PA system, data, data, data. And so what we have to do is compare. We can't compare people. That's biased, racist, sexist, and against the code of socioeconomic cultural responsiveness. I'm telling you how they're getting us. I'm trying my best here. Watch this. So you have to play on the actual data. So the data is what it was. It's white females at the top of the strata, every state, no matter what. White education in America is tailored theoretically for the white female. And then how it plays under that is white males, even though they earn more after the fact, they actually score less than the average white female. Right up under and mixed in with white males is the black female. And at the lowest end are the African-American males, black males, and Hispanic children. Now, you can get Hispanic girls achieving up there with white males and to a lesser degree, black females. Now, this is how the numbers played out on the data sheet that was sent to us teachers. After they analyzed the educational achievement of all the children in the state of Missouri, and I've kept it to the state of Missouri, please, and how it was playing out. Okay, so I looked in the classroom to see, all right, if that's what's happening in the state, what's happening in my classroom? And what's happening in my classroom is that white girls don't fidget. They don't have that neuromuscular issue where they have to stand up, they have to move in the chair, they have to tap on the desk, they have to tap their leg, they have to move, they have to have that thing in their hand. And so this is what I'm finding. Now, I want to know, am I the only one not seeing certain behaviors in certain populations? I'm bringing it down to behavior. Fidgety, low impulse control behavior. Am I the only one seeing it? Either of our guests, whichever one feels like they could help me with this.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and jump right in here. I'm Joanne. Currently, I am a teacher for 23 long years, and I see a lot of different behavior when I initially started teaching. And I do see some fidgeting. I do see some things of that sort, the body movement and things like that. But what I find also when I look back over the years that I've been in education and the reason, bringing it back to the question of why is the low performing students, Everything about education is totally different now. Everything. Where we came in with a set, and I might be older than you guys, a set of pre-ready skills for learning that were in our household, even the worst household in our household. We have children now, I have sixth graders, who are reading on a second grade level. I have students who enter in the classroom not even knowing how to spell their name, their last name, getting that wrong on paper. When we went to school, those things were funneled from the home into the classroom. So there's a gap automatically when we are raising our kids, and this is across the board. This is not black, white. I see it. I work in a very diverse school system, which I'm happy about. I have Asians, I have whites, I have Africans, I have everything, you name it. So I find that those pre-ready skills for learning are not set in the home. Now, mind you, we have some young population of parents. Our parents might have been older. But I find when we're starting out behind the eight ball, it is extremely hard to catch up. When we look at the data, we're looking at kids with scores where, let's take a seventh grader on the map. By spring of seventh grade, they should be at least at a 214, 217. Okay? That's what the map says. That's what the measure is. Our kids just breaking 160. You know, so, I mean, we need to get back to the reading, the writing, and arithmetic. That's what we need to get back to, the basics for these children. And that's where we're lacking, especially our African-American.
Ms. Joanne.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Joanne, they won't sit down. They can't.
A lot of kids.
When you get ready to address these issues in the home, would you agree the child would have to sit down?
Well, what I find is partly that is true and partly some things you can build in your instruction. So, for example, we run a 47-minute period, seven periods a day. I teach middle school. And I also taught, when I taught in New York, I taught the younger.
Bless your heart, by the way. Bless your heart. We love you. I've taught it. Oh, bless your heart, ma'am. I love you. Please forgive them. I don't know what to say for them people. Ma'am, I'm so sorry to do you like that.
Middle school can be tough. The focus is really on a lot of other things, the society things that we have now. But I do find that we as educators, and my colleagues are doing the best. I love my colleagues, but I feel as though we need to break in some break changes, some brain changes, some things that meet them where they are, because we're never going to change. They can't sit down. They can't do this. That's innate. I mean, their diet is different. We can go on for days and days. They're being exposed to different toxins in the home, whether somebody's smoking illegal, smoking weed. Well, it's legal now, but in certain states. But there
be legal depending on what state they're in.
Dependent, that is true. But we as educators can do some things that kind of tweak our instruction, tweak certain things that we have control over. Because the state, what people don't know, the state sets the curriculum. So on Fridays, I have a group of, 12 boys. So you can imagine how sixth grade boys, how my life is with them. But the caveat I hold over their head is Friday, we'll have a little free time. Now, my direct boss, who is my coordinator for my discipline, know that they're getting some kind of small reward, something. Friday's free day. It is not video games. It is not using your phone. It's board games. It's things like drawing. It's things like that. Where they're buying into that and they're building up a little more tolerance to sit down, to feed into the instruction. Because ultimately that's what we want. We want them to feed into the instruction because the more they buy into the curriculum, the lessons, the more the learning will occur. So that's what we're trying to do. So Friday's every Monday I'm like, Friday's free day. Let's see who's completed their vocabulary. Let's see. Raise your hand if you need help. So it's a lot of bags of tricks that we did not have to do before as educators. You know, we put the lesson on the board, and that was that. Now there's a lot of tricks. I also like to use a lot of imagery and visuals because, sad to say, at 2 years old, these kids got a phone, and they know how to work it. And some of them have a better phone than me. So you're using things like pictures if I'm talking about a rhino. You know, if I'm talking about a rhino, these kids might have not had a zoo experience. This is what the rhino looks
right.
like. So it's just a lot
right.
of things, a lot of things that we as educators can control, and there's some things that we can't. But I want to focus on what we can control because these numbers are getting lower and lower and lower
and
lower.
That's what I wanted to address that too. Sir, what have you found?
Yes.
I was trying to ask. Sorry about that. I was trying to ask you, what, in your opinion, do you think is the in-house classroom reason why this gap, you know, exists amongst the population of children?
Well, one of the things that I see, definitely I want to come from a parent empowerment approach where I was working with a family recently. One of my friends, her grandson, was having some difficulty in school. However, they weren't familiar with the current standards, the current, you know, I'm in California, so the California-based standards. So I was able to give them a couple apps that they were able to download to give them the apps for, this was a third grader. So they could know exactly what the standards are because they were basing it on when we were in school. They didn't realize that the standards now are, you know, they're really high. The standards are really high for these third graders compared to when we were in school. So they thought that he was fine until they saw what he was actually being asked to do. And I think parents have to become more familiar with the standards to know exactly where their child should be. Because this young man was having a lot of difficulty with regrouping. And, of course, his peers
in the
classroom, they, you know, regrouping is when you're working with the borrowing, when you're doing subtraction. So he really didn't have that experience.
I didn't
really
graduate from college, and my dad feels stupid. What the hell is regrouping?
No. Right.
He had me confused.
It becomes a skill you just use. Over time, it becomes a skill, but you have to lay the neuronal track. Now, I'm so glad you mentioned that the household is the first classroom. The household is indeed where you have to begin. And so how do you orient your household to be conducive to education, you know?
And I think it really starts with the expectations and knowing what the expectations are, knowing what your child is being asked to do at school, and then being able to, you know, to be able to provide that at home, provide the same kind of academia at home. You know, a lot of this young man, he was on YouTube all the time. He was on PlayStation all the time. So that parent had to reduce that time that he was on the computer or playing on the PlayStation, and that time needed to go in. She went out and got some whiteboards for him, and they start working with the whiteboards at home so he could really see and work on it. And then he started improving because it wasn't that he didn't have the ability. The parent really didn't know where he should be, you know. And then what happens a lot of times with our African-American students, they start falling behind it, and then our students know that they're behind the other kids. And then they'll start getting frustrated. Then that's when you see the fidgeting. Are they want to escape? They want to get out of there because they start knowing that they're not up to par with their peers. I had a first grader last year. I was a principal of an elementary school last year, and this young man was in the middle of first grade, and he didn't recognize any letters. The only letter that he recognized was X.
Wow.
but his peers in the classroom were already starting to breathe. So he was out of that. He was busting out of the classroom, running away, and finding everything else to do because he was starting to feel embarrassed already at 6 years old. We were able to put together an SST meeting for this family, this particular family, and we had special educators at the table. It was a team, you know. And I let the parent know that even if we do recommend this child for assessment, that doesn't mean that he can't work his way back into the general ed classroom. We just want to get him caught up so he does recognize his letters, and then he can start reading and get back up to par. Because sometimes when we bring up special ed, people think, oh, well, this is going to be forever. But sometimes it's a temporary placement. A kid can work their way back up and get back into the general classroom. So that's how I was able to present it to the parent. We came to the table. We were able to get him into the appropriate setting. There was some pushback from some of the teachers that were receiving him. But once he got into the classroom with students that were more at his ability level, his behavior improved. I didn't see him in the office the rest of the year. And this was the kid that were when we were doing math, when he was in the other classroom, when he was counting the blocks up, he wasn't counting any blocks. He was turning his blocks into little handguns. And him and his buddy. So we weren't even, the whole conversation changed, but we weren't even working on academics anymore. We're working on talking about gun violence and why it's bad for the black community. But once we got him into the appropriate setting, a lot of those negative behaviors went away. He stayed in the classroom, and he was so happy. And that his new teacher was able to because we would do these presentations. We had a 5-week cycle of inquiry where we would do presentations at the end of the 5 weeks. So his new teacher did a presentation, and everybody was able to see this young man in class working. And it was just like a totally different person. So I think my thing is we definitely have to empower our parents. And just one last thing I want to say is we have to really decriminalize the hood and our black students when it comes to school and really provide more therapeutic settings for our kids and let parents know it's okay to have your kid in counseling, you know, because many of these kids are coming out of the pandemic. They do have some social-emotional difficulties that need to be addressed, and we have to let parents know that it's okay. Therapy is okay. Therapy is a good thing. We want our kids to be able to receive and embrace therapy also. So those are some of the things that I think. Sure.
Because of his mama.
Can I jump in for half a second? Because I wanted to ask, so you were talking about therapy and coming out of the pandemic. But before the pandemic, because of technology, is a lack of social skills holding these kids back?
Yeah.
You know, because I think a lot of us learned because we had to learn, because we didn't want to be left behind. We didn't want to be teased, so on and so forth. I remember learning math because there was a young lady on my block, whom I was interested in, by the way, but she knew 12 times 12. Like the back of her hand, and I was like, I'm not there yet. And I put my nose to the grindstone to get deeper into mathematics so, you know, she couldn't hit me with that. You know what I mean? Because history, science, reading, oh, yeah, math. Math and I, until college, we had a lukewarm relationship. It was lukewarm. You know, I was a A student, sometimes B. But that B was always math, and or that low A was always math. Everything else, high A, without a doubt. So is that too hindering our young folk from achieving? Do you all think that too is hindering our young folk from achieving their greatness? Because, you know, they don't – and – the other side of that, now that I'm thinking about it, when they are teens, are they acting out so much because they don't have those social skills to understand that that's just a part of the life, that's just a part of the game, that they're spending more and more time in the principal's office because they're getting in trouble because they don't know how to regulate their emotions. Is that huge for you? Is that a huge part of what you all may be seeing?
I'm going to jump in here on the technology piece as well. This is Joanne. So I find that kids are up 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning playing video games. And the video game might give them one command and say, turn here, put this here. And that's not really socially interacting with your peers, with an adult who's going to conversate with you. And in our day, say politicking. You know, we used to say politic, and, you know, we're not setting these kids up where, you know, when they come home from school, we don't know, sometimes no one is home. So the video games is raising them. And what we need to do is look at embedding, and this is in some schools and it's not in all schools, embedding and tapping into that social, you know, intelligence, so to speak. When you see someone, you know, if you don't understand what they're saying, can you repeat that or you want them to repeat that? We do a thing where, like, we put, like, a stemming question up there, like a do now, and say, what's your favorite food? And then someone might say, oh, I love carrots. I love this. But before they can even get that out, the other person is, the other student is talking, I don't like carrots. And we're teaching them, you need to wait. Everybody's opinion is valued. You need to count to 10. Those are skills we have to begin to teach because they don't know that. It's just like bringing in daycare when you snatch the toy from someone back and, I want that. You have to teach them that. Somebody's speaking when someone enters a room. These are things for granted our parents taught us. You better say hello to Miss Mary as she comes in this house, you know, or Uncle Bob or something. These are things we need to teach them. You know, hello, how are you? When they enter in the classroom, we have a lot of kids who just bust in the classroom. You know, put their books down. Good afternoon, how are you today, Bobby, or whoever they are. These are social skills they're not getting. You can see this carried over in customer service when we call up something wrong with our car, something wrong with our hello, how may I help you? These are things that we need to show them. If someone gives you something, thank you so much. Okay, you don't have to like everybody. You don't have to love everybody, but you do have to show that I'm a person that I can respect your opinion. We may differ. I can share my opinion. These are things, these are hard skills because they're not coming in the home with this. Good morning. Would you like, you know, we serve breakfast in our school. Would you like to go and get your breakfast? Put your books down. Just those simple things we need to do. Even with your own children, children coming up, how was your day today? And give them opportunities to share and articulate. They might not have the exact words. My day was bad. Okay, why was it bad? What is something maybe tomorrow that would make it a better day? What is something that we can improve? I didn't have my lunch. I left it at home. Okay. So tomorrow before we leave this house, we need to do a, you know, a run of the mill. You know, do you have your lunch? Do you have your this? And it may seem babyish for the middle school child, but they are crying for that. They are crying for that adult attention to say those things to them. I have a similar little boy. A similar little boy, he comes in and he's all disheveled. He didn't have a notebook. He didn't have. I said to him, minus his name, I said, hey, I have some extra binders. I have pencils. Would you like that? You know, yes. He brings the binder every day. So those are the things we need to look at and kind of embed. And going back on the parent piece, you know, we need to do, we say community and parents. As a school system, we are not embracing these parents. We can do a dinner in the evening, just a math night, just to show them where they are in this grade, in that grade, and just to give them a little snippet. Well, here's what your kid is going to be learning in the fifth grade or the fourth grade. Here's what your kid should have known. Here's some things that you can work on it with them. You know, here's ways, because it's easy enough to say parent empowerment, but it's also we have to show them as well. We have to take in account our parents, you know, did these things by fear and knowing what to do. Like, you better sit down and write out those timetables. You know, I tell everybody a funny story. When my brother came home with no homework, I don't have any homework. My mother said, start writing your timetable. Start with zero and go all the way to 12. It was like, zero? What? You know, and those are the things. But she made him write it out. So we might say to these parents, before your kid goes in second grade, they need to know how to double-digit addition. What we call regrouping, they call borrowing. You borrow from a friend. Whatever terminology we want to use, we can work up to that, but it's actually cross out and borrow. You're borrowing two from a friend, one from a friend, and just show them. Because on the math level, math has gotten really extremely complicated for these kids, and they will.
And it's done on, and that's done on purpose, though. I just want to interject because I think the elephant in the room is that school has become too much of a corporation and a business. And even though they call these students scholars, they're treating the families more like customers versus a learning institution. It's rooted too tough in the curriculum. It's rooted too tough in all of these unvetted ideologies. And we still know, like you just said, grouping and borrowing is the same thing. Why change the terminology? You know that you know that parents are struggling with the terminology, but you still want to use the terminology as if the main teacher is always the parent. So you can't divorce that child from education with the parent. The other problem that I see, and I told Brother Lee and Sister Rossi this a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I've always taught social skills in my classroom first. My kindergartners left kindergarten prepared for second grade, and they also were taught algebra in kindergarten. Why? Because of the social skills that I was able to put in. As long as they could sit still, know how to allow each other to listen, know how to understand what their role is in a classroom, and then set the expectations, you can program these children to do almost anything. The problem is that when the corporation side of it, oh, well, are you teaching this curriculum? You need to have this done at this time. Well, this little, these babies don't even know how to regulate their bodies yet.
No, they don't.
Let's teach them that. And in my last piece, because I think that most of us on here would agree. The other side, when it comes to the parents, threw the baby out with the bathwater. And what I mean by that is, if you don't believe you growing up in Sunday school didn't teach you or prepare you for regular school, you don't really understand the process. Most of us came equipped for school based off of Sunday school. You may not like this certain church. You may not even believe in the ideology. But some of those things that you gained by being inside of that Sunday school prepared you for the long haul. I only do public speaking the way I do because it started with an Easter speech. Two lines. And now today I can give a public speech for over hours at a time. So those are the things that I feel like where parents are kind of, they're kind of handicapping their children because they feel like once the bus drops them off, the education is done.
Yeah.
No, the education is constant. Your baby should have as many coloring books in the home if they're
That's
in
right.
or pre-K as they got video games or access to smartphones,
That's right.
puzzles.
That's
Those are the things. Where are the board games inside of your household? Every household, Roddy says 10 books. Brother, I agree with 10 books, but you need 10 board games. Why? Because your children need to be able to sit down at the table through those board games and show you what the 10 books as well as the school is teaching them. Display it through the games. But that's what we're taking away from our families, and I love our people to death. But one of the things that I always say to a lot of educators that I know, don't have your children out at these community events with the community so much that you're not getting that one-on-one time to teach your baby. You need to know that your child is learning. You need to teach your child how, because it's also responsibilities at home. Where's the chores at? All of these things are all learning processes. You can't divorce yourself from none of these things. Right. Our problem is we want to buck the ultimate system because some of us didn't like the fact that we were punished. Listen,
right.
Your parent may be administered the wrong way. It does not mean that it's not an effective tool, minus some of the abuse you encounter.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the other piece to that is, you know, during the pandemic, going back to that point, the schools are closed. Let me tell you something. The dollar store has coloring books.
Mm-hmm.
They have regular books. The dollar store, okay? Amazon. Amazon started out with books. It was Amazon books before it got all these other things. So, yeah, we can sit here and say the school is closed, but a book is never closed. A book is pencils
and
crayons.
And the library was open.
The library,
the public library is always there.
Here. We have a beautiful library in my neighborhood. And I can tell you that very few people, I go in there, it's vacant. One of my Friday night activities with my youngest daughter was to go to Barnes & Noble. And they had it, you know, just sit there and I used to say you can get one book, you know. You need one book, and then we'll come back next Friday. You know, but, I mean, she asked to go to the bookstore. And it's like, yeah, we can make excuses for pandemic, this, but paper is still there. Your kid can draw two circles, put some eyes on it and a body, and explain to you, hey, this is my version of an elephant. And you can say, well, let's kind of add his long trunk. Let's do this. That ain't close. The pandemic didn't shut that down. The pandemic, so we've got to get away from this has happened. I go to the dollar store and just buy stuff just because, you know, oh, look at this coloring book. I don't have grandkids. I don't have little kids, but I buy it and give it away. You know, the friends that I know that, here, this will help your child. So we got to get away from, you have to be the most educated parent to help your child. No, you don't have to be. You just have to be present and consistent and buy into this is my child and I want the best for them. Going back to my last point, and then I'll let someone interject. The math curriculum has changed. However, the things that we need to do to get in college, where we want our kids to get in college, has not changed. On the SAT and the ACT, they don't give a hoot how you get that answer. Whether you say I'm borrowing $4,000 from $3,000, they don't care. They care about it is the right answer and your score. So it doesn't matter what method you use to show the kid, I can get this answer. You can get this answer. The SAT, those college entrance exams, are not saying you have to do it this way. And that's what's the sad part. You know, I'll never forget my daughter came home and she was doing money and she was drawing legs on the coins. And I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, the teacher said the coin should be able to walk. I said, 25 cents is 25 cents. It's going to be 25 cents to the day. And it's going to be in time. A dollar is going to be a dollar. A dollar is going to be a dollar. So, yeah, you can see those methods that they're teaching, but you also can come in and say, hey, this is 50 cents. Two quarters, you know, make 50 cents. Four quarters make a dollar. So there's my
soapbox. You said you're going to let somebody interject.
Mm-hmm. Yes, go right ahead. I'm sorry. I get so passionate about
it. It's okay. I felt that. Cuz, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, I just definitely want to piggyback on the rest of the panel, just on the whole thing of parent empowerment. And so it is so important that we intervene. And, you know, parents, we have to be an intervention ourselves, you know. Here in California, we're definitely fighting against the pipeline to prison. That is the focus because – here in California, the schools and the prison systems are both run by the state. And sometimes you see the reflective nature of the schools and the prison system. So we have to actively fight against it because we have to change this trajectory of our kids going to our black kids mainly going down that pipeline to prison, and really we can definitely clog that pipeline by through education and parents being more involved and you know just working with the school to ensure that our kids don't end up in prison, because the system you know they're letting our kids fail coast to coast. I mean we see the data coming out of Chicago where you know not many kids are working at a proficiency level at any of their schools, and a lot of those young men are going to prison. So we definitely have to be intentional with our actions to liberate our kids through like some of the things we're talking about through reading literacy. But a lot of it's going to be parent activism, you know, to get our parents involved. And yes.
But you're asking them to admit that they themselves can't read. We're not talking about one generation of illiteracy. We're talking about, well, if we're honest, we're talking about 100-something years, because, you know, that's how long it's been since it's been legal for us to actually just themselves, you know, according to how we see fit. And then all the other systemic stuff that happened, Jim Crow-wise and board versus education, this and that. And so the actual well of information has an air of poison to it. So now we are saying, we have been saying since the 60s or whatever, we got to educate ourselves, power to the all knowledge is power. Power is family. Knowledge to the people. And so that was embedded. The idea of educating your family was embedded in at least definitely the civil rights, definitely the Panther movement. All that was educate your family. Fine, fine, fine. But how if you yourself lack the fundamental skills? So when we say your family is the teacher, what you're telling them is, hey, can you pick somebody in your family to show up to these tutoring meetings with your child, and we're going to train both of y'all, whoever can't read else who couldn't teach them to read, we're going to train both of y'all to read. Because if you send a child home with work that a parent can't do, it disturbed the power dynamic between parent and child, and now in the eyes of the child, shut your dumb ass up. Shut your dumb ass up. You don't know how to help me. You can't even do this work with me. If you don't set it up so somebody else in the family can support the child, a struggling child, and help with this dynamic, you've got to pick a family advocate who's ready to show up at the tutoring or the whatever or the special. But it's a reason why that child can't read.
I think a lot of times we make excuses that are not really there. There's people that want to help their families. Maybe they're not allowing those people to help. A lot of this is about pride, too, if we're being honest. It used to be, and me and Roddy talks about this all the time, where shame would make people stand down to do certain things so the right thing could happen. The parent may not know how to help you, but a parent may have a friend that comes over to the house all the time, Aunt Charlene.
I'm doing me, right, you know. I got you. Go ahead.
And then the other thing, too, Sister Rashi, we came out the plantation with generations of people illiterate. The point of they wanted the next generation to be better than them. When you have adults, and I talk about this all the time on my show, when you have adults living their second and third childhood, that means that there's no space for the kids to live childhoods. And that's the other side that we don't talk about in our community. So many of us are living like the little prince and princess toys that we played with versus being adults and making space so that these kids can get the proper thing. I feel like a lot of it is not necessarily about will or skill level. I think a lot of it is just about discipline and sacrifice. Are you willing to sacrifice for the next generation? That has to be the question. And what are you willing to sacrifice? We have to ask those questions, and we got to put that back not only on the parents, because I know some parents may not be able to do it, Sister Rashi, but is it friends of the family? Is it the other parent that's not in the household? Is that person good at math? You know, which parent is good at literacy? sometimes you break it down. My ex, man, she could write the hell out of a term paper better than me. So when it came to English and she was a nurse and science, that was her. I did math, world studies. That was my thing. So that's how we broke that down. In the household, we knew our strong suits. We knew who could do what, and that's what we did. And the things that we couldn't do, oh, let me call Brother Travis, man. This is a little bit too complicated with math, man. Let me call my brother over here. Let him help Rondé or Ray now. So that's what you have to do. You don't. It's not that these kids feel like their parents are ignorant. The ignorance come in when the parents are refusing to help the child. And I'll make this one point about a school I was at. The school had a no homework policy. And I was against that policy. This goes back to brother saying that the advocacy. I was against the no homework policy. So if you were in my class, you got homework. Brother, this is the curriculum that people are spending money and the workshops and everything. That's the corporation bit that I'm telling you, Lee. And a lot of schools administered no homework policies.
Exactly.
So they were saying no homework, no homework, no homework. I said, well, listen, y'all fired two teachers before I got in here. I come in, it's November, these kids are behind. In order for them to get where they need to be, they're going to have to do homework to catch up. And then also, I teach beyond the curriculum. I'm going to teach you for not the next grade, but the grade after that. So that way, when you show up in first grade, you're going to be prepared for second grade. That makes it easier for the next teacher. And so some of the parents acquiesced. They had their children doing homework. Those children were excelling all throughout.
Absolutely.
I had three parents, they refused, oh, this is a no homework policy. Okay, cool. Don't do no homework. And I kept saying all year, hey, don't, if you don't want your little man to do homework, well, hey, don't have him do homework. But you're going to see the difference at the end of the year.
Absolutely.
End of the year show up, we got schoolwork and everything on the board. They're trying to figure out why are these other kids doing algebra and my kid can't. Well, your kid didn't do the homework. And not only that, your kid is behind these other scholars. These other scholars are reading. Why?
Yep.
Because that wasn't a part of the curriculum, but in my classroom, that was a part of what I was teaching. So you have to understand that parents have to say, well, maybe I don't care what the school is saying. If the teacher is doing what's best for my child, let me ride with that. Because here's the other thing that people really don't talk about. And this is why when you had it intersect, because I know sister, she's an educator. An educator's wrong with it, man. We got a long win, but because we're used to sitting at the board teaching. When you're in the classroom, it's a microcosm of your own world. The school is one thing, but the classroom is the teacher's own thing. You want to know how a classroom is going to be operated is based off the ability of the teacher as well as what the teacher sets as their desired outcomes.
Right.
If you got teachers that are out there wanting your child to be the best. Little Johnny can't come home and say, Miss So-and-so mistreated me when we know Miss So-and-so is just asking for little Johnny to give his all. You got to support that. You got to have a conversation as a parent, going back to social skills. Have a conversation outside of your child with that teacher to say, hey, how can I support you to make this better for my kid? That's where the problem is. Brother said we got a bubble of ignorance. No, we got a lack, this Roddy in the chat, we have a lack of social skill training. These adults don't know how to socialize. Going back to her point about customer service. Customer service ain't even customer service no more. It's what? It's never beg your pardon. Excuse me, can you repeat that? They're just as ignorant as somebody on the streets.
Yep.
On a recorded line, by the way. So that shows you where I education is going in this country.
Yeah. And also, brother, we have a no homework policy. But I can tell you, my kids get homework every Monday, and it's due to me on Friday. And if you do not turn it in, and the homework is set up, and this is another thing we can do as teachers, you're not sending home homework a new skill for them to try to grapple with, because that might need instruction in terms of the teacher's craftiness to say, this is how you attack it. You're sending homework home as a practice, as picking up in their fluency. So let's say the kid is doing addition. This is the skill that's being taught in school. What is wrong with the kid going home, using their own brain, and doing 10 addition problems? There is nothing wrong with usage. That is not anything that's hurting the family or hurting the kids. While I'm getting your food together, for your dinner or while I'm washing your clothes, start working on problem one and two. Miss Adams sent home 5 addition problems. You're going to help the kid do that. That builds their confidence. That builds their skill level. That builds their fluency, which is being tested on the MAP-M nationally. That builds all of those things. We got to stop looking at, and I agree, the teacher's the enemy. We got to say, you know, no one in this profession that I know of entered into the profession and just said, I just want to screw kids up. That's what I want to do. I don't believe that. I have an innate belief in my colleagues. So, I mean, we did this whole, the kids need time to play. But also kids need time to practice what was taught in the school. If it's alphabet, like you said, some parents don't know the alphabet. As they're going along, you can be learning and picking up little skills as well as, oh, okay, I know I need to borrow this way, right to left, to hold the book, left to right, whatever. So the no homework policy, again, is a setup as well, too. Now, I'm not saying send home 90 pages of homework for the kid to do. No. But 1 sheet a day on a skill that you have practiced, whether it's science, whether it's social studies, naming the continent, you know, it's not going to hurt the child. And the whole attitude about, well, that teacher them said something to my kid. You know, yeah, there are a lot of teachers who may say things to your kid, but I can rest assured that your child has said something back, has said something first.
Mm-hmm. I could, in second and third and fifth and sixth had kept talking. I told you to sit down, young man, please. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to ask you all about as an educator, right, is your relationship with the people above you, the support you receive for the work that you have to do. Because I'm kind of a small fish in a big pond right now in that I'm uncertified, but I've been joined in a program called Teach to Lead. And in that program, I'm supposed to function as a teacher of record, but then receive all the support I could possibly receive to achieve, you know, certification, and then report out how well I was supported, you know, through the process, just to be very transparent about, did I get this kind of help, or did they talk to me about the finances of it, or did anybody ever talk to me about this program or that program? You understand? So I'm asking, you know, in your years, what worked best? What is BS? Stop doing it. And what should I be asking for? You know, what should I really be looking out for support for myself, you know, long term? Cousin, if you're still here.
Yes, I'm still here. So you're asking long term, like a long term plan?
Right. It's supposed to transform me in the next 2 to 5. Definitely, they wanted to make it 1 to 2, but it's almost impossible to become a teacher while you're teaching. The workload that's associated with the work career, in addition to the workload of them talking about what it takes to get through the career, it's a lot. So I'm just trying to figure out what kind of support I'm supposed to be receiving or looking at, because if I'm not receiving it, I would like to know. And if I'm getting, you know, what I need for long-term success, I'd like to know that, you know.
Right. I would say your administrators should definitely be in your, you know, classroom and making sure your evaluations are done and supporting you as far as from their administrative role, to see exactly what support you might need as a teacher. But then on the school side of it, I know it is very difficult when you're working a full-time job as a teacher and then also trying to take the credential courses at the same time. Is definitely a grueling experience going through that. I would just say eventually it does come to an end. I know for me, I was a special education teacher, so we had to have level 1 and level 2 credentials, and it seemed like it took forever. However, you know, the time does pass, and I used to use my credential courses as a place where I could vent a little bit and talk to other educators about certain things that I was seeing on a daily basis, and that would kind of help me through the whole process. But it is very, very difficult to get the credential and teach full-time. You should have a mentor that's helping you out through the district. If not, I would definitely seek that out to see if you can get a mentor to, you know, like, what do they call that?
Like a shadow, like a shadowing teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah. Definitely like a shadowing teacher, and just somebody that you can consult with on a regular basis, just to give you some assistance with whatever you're going through. Because teachers have to do so much work with all the different meetings that teachers are asked to attend, and then you're dealing with the 30-something kids and then parents, and keeping up with the pacing in the classroom is very, very hard work. There should be a district representative that is giving you some support to help you through all that.
And
the other
piece
of that is
the meeting. Hold on one second. So you said all the meetings and things that you all have to hold on one second, Jared. So you said all the meetings and things that you all have to go through. When did that come about? Because, you know, again, outside looking in. Okay, I understand. I apologize for rubbing you the wrong way. But from outside looking in, that's not something I think most people are hip to. So when has that come to the forefront, and why is that a part of you all's jobs now? Now, I know that, you know, there were training days and stuff like that, and I totally understand that. And but the various meetings, like, what the heck is that all about?
Did you want me to speak to it?
Yeah,
I would
please.
Say with the inception of IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, more and more mm-hmm. students have IEPs now.
Okay.
So many are in resource, but they may be fully mainstreamed in classes, but they still have an IEP. So they, all those students that have the IEPs now, it's so many. You know, back in our day, special ed was students in that special day class that had one room where they would put everybody in. But now it's totally different,
yeah.
Where you have so many kids. Like, usually nowadays at schools, at least 10 to 15% of the school's population has special ed services. So all those kids now in that school all have annual meetings, and some have their triennial meetings. And teachers are required to attend those meetings, or at least prepare some kind of, progress update, or at least be at the meeting. Yeah, so that, honestly, that added to all teachers' workloads because, and, you know, I think it's good that more kids have services, but it's just the reality that you have so many kids, and that's not even to mention the students that have 504 plans. Because you have other kids that are receiving.
What's a 504 plan?
So 504 is an extension of special ed. However, those kids are not on a caseload at all, but they are receiving accommodations. So they you have a great number of kids like that too, where they have a mild. It could be dyslexia. It could be many different mild forms of learning disability, and then they'll still have this 504 plan. And if they have a meeting, teachers are asked to attend those meetings too. So that's a whole another group of kids that are on these campuses. And, you know, doesn't matter if you're, California or whatever state, these are federal regulations.
Right.
So you have a lot of students that have these rights and these services. And as an educator, we are required to attend those meetings. So it's definitely added to our responsibilities.
Gotcha. Rodney, you want to get in?
So, good morning, everybody. Lee got me up early again. Pardon me for being late, but I've been listening to the topic, and I think this is like the hottest thing that we have going on in this 2024 election, and it should be. There's so many things that's been said, but I guess I'll take it to this. During the pandemic and children were forced to be home every day, I'm told that they lost academic progress during that period. And I remember them saying that we have to get our children back in school so we can check on them because we're afraid that they're living in terrible conditions. They might be physically harmed or they're just lacking in academic progress at home. Mm-hmm. So I laid that out because since that's how we felt about children being at home and getting an education and their safety during the pandemic, why would we expect those same children to do any better or much better when parents only get a couple of hours a day with them? Because if we think they'll do better because the school is going to do better, then that seems to be problematic. If we think that they're unsafe at home during the pandemic, then wouldn't they be unsafe at home even when there is no pandemic? There seems to be something missing in this discussion on our children that has a lot to do with parents, but not everything to do with parents. Can anybody address this?
I mean, I just tried. I told you that we got some long term illiteracy, and so what you have to do is you got to get one or two people per family, and they all have to agree that if any slippage happens at all, they agree to come to the house, to the school, pay the teacher, pay an interventionist, pay somebody to be at that school from the end of school to 2 hours before or 1 hour before, 1 hour after. I don't know how it works. And they sit down not just with the child, but with the parent, whoever else can't teach the child at home. And they all sit down together and learn not just what the child needs to know, but what the parent needs to know to show them how the skill of teaching a child works. If you want us to have anything, you close that triangle of reality, home, school. You understand the home-school triangle? You got to fix it and tell them, hey, you got to teach them like this, or you got to teach them this. Here's the curriculum. I gave every household I teach the full curriculum for both subjects all year. If you ain't going to send them, this is what they missing out on understanding. It's your job to do it. Here's the website. Here's the passcode. Show them that they have to keep going to school even when they with you. And they'll stop pretending like they create a new reality at the schoolhouse where they levitate and throwing food and running around in the hallway, slapping each other.
Hold on. We have a caller. I want to get the caller in, and we got to respect the time of our guest because I asked him for an hour, and we're running a little bit over right now. So, Brian, go ahead, brother. What's your question or comment, sir?
Okay, yeah, this is Brian Harris. Here's my comment. The school systems are messed up, but we got to look back to our history first to get a solution. There was a time when they didn't allow us to go to school, and we, the people, taught ourselves to read and write. Unfortunately, we've given up into the society of believing that other people should dictate the success and failure of our kids. When I was growing up, and I'm 63 years old, I was never afraid of the school. I was afraid of my mama. I was afraid of bringing home bad grades. I was afraid of not meeting the expectations of my family. So until we get the family involved, until we get the parents to understand, take a little bit of time to teach your children, then we will be forever lost because we, a lot of times, are asking the oppressor to teach us. As a matter of fact, as we have integrated the school systems, many of the teachers don't look like us. See, I grew up in Gary, Indiana. Most of the teachers lived in my city, lived in my neighborhood, and would whoop my butt if I did wrong. And they whooped
me. You weren't afraid of your mama. You afraid that switch.
Now, I was afraid of my mama because I know she could weld the switch. But the bottom line I'm saying is, black people, we must take back our education. We got great stuff. You know, I've started looking at reels a lot because there's so much black history that you don't have to make these kids sit down and spend hours reading a book. We need to figure out our curriculums that are fun curriculums, that are informational curriculums, and we need to teach our kids self. If we teach them self, they will start to change their behaviors at school. But folks, asking the oppressor to do this, you're asking the slave master to make the slave equal. It's time for us to stop giving excuses about the school system, to giving excuses about the teachers. If we have to go out and teach our kids our own damn self, then we need to go out and teach them. Because folks, our families dictate our success.
Definitely.
Not the slave master.
So thank you, sir. Thank you for your comment.
Because I'm from Indiana as well, but I would say that migrations of families where they migrate to other states, like I'm in Minnesota, so far away from South Bend, Indiana. Part of the problem is that we don't have the collectives, and I can tell you the way I was able to learn back home compared to my siblings that moved here, I am further advanced in education and academics. I was rooted in that community back home where everybody was familiar and my mother trusted more people with me compared to moving around strangers. Migration has a lot to do with it. We don't talk about that enough in our families, and I know we got brother from California. And so I'm like, oh, man, he got to deal with the Latino community, the Asian community, the African-American community, African immigrant community. There's so many things and dynamics going on in classrooms. And one thing he said about the more work, the one thing that ain't nobody ever said, you got more responsibilities on teachers. Teachers get more blame with less pay. Less pay and less time to even focus to prepare. See, that's the other side that most people who are not in education don't get. You need time to prepare to be able to handle those students.
Speaking on time, we need to make sure that we give our guests their time back because we have run over a little bit. If you all are okay, we'll stick. If not, then we'll go because we do need to cover some other things in the show. But I wanted to take this moment to thank you both, James, because thank you, man. I know it's as early for you as it is Rodney, so I know it wasn't easy to get up this morning, but I so appreciate you, family. I really, really do. Joanne, again, thank you for your time this morning. So appreciate you all. So I appreciate you both. Any final words from Joanne first? Joanne, make it short, because I know how you can get.
I just get passionate. I am so sorry. I just say, love your children. Love your children. Try to get them to their best potential and build your children's village. There's people around who want to help your children, whether it's uncle, aunt, sister, brother, cousin. And it was a pleasure meeting everybody. Lee, I'm sure I will see you soon, brother.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, sis. Hey, what's up, cuz? What you got to say on rollout?
All right, I just want to thank you, cuz, again, for, having me on the show, and thank you to all the panelists. And I just wanted to say, this what I've been hearing from everyone is a team effort. That's how we're going to be able to help this next generation move forward. Is definitely we have to work together. Everybody has to work together, pool the resources, but more importantly, identify what the resources are. Find out what districts are offering as interventions. Find out what that individual school is offering as interventions. Give ideas. Parents, get involved on the school site council. You can – that's on the school site council, they actually determine how the budget money is spent for each school has their own school site council. And that empowers you as a parent to say, hey, let's get some black curriculum in here. Let's get some more black books in our school library. Let's research. Let's see what other standards-based curriculum will help our kids and has people that look like our kids inside the books. So just those are just some of the things that we can do as a team to work together to help this next this next generation along. But I just want to thank everyone for your time, and I look forward to joining you guys again in the future.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely going to need to continue this conversation because obviously we didn't have enough time today. Hour is never enough, but it was worth getting the conversation started. I'm not trying to kick it down the road. However, there's other news and other things that we need to talk about on the show. And one of the things that we've learned over the years is if you continue to talk about the same subject time and time again. I'm sorry, for too long, you turn people off. So it's better to do multiple parts, multiple shows covering the same thing than just an elongated show going to one thing. But again, I committed to you all for an hour. We ran a little bit over, so I want to give you some of your time back for today because, again, I want to be as a person of our word as I possibly can be. So thank you. Thank you both. Have a great day.
Thank you too.
Bye now. Peace. So speaking of what Cuz was talking about getting on the committees and stuff, voting is a huge portion of that. And I'll bring Brian back in if Brian wants to join. That's cool. Voting is a huge portion of that. Rodney advocates for that all the time because, you know, your vote dictates whom controls the school board. Ultimately, it dictates whom is appointed. It dictates if the board is appointed. It could very well dictate who is on the school board, depending on the district that you live in, because the school board members can also be voted in. As we all know, we're looking at Vote 2024, and the news is running rampant right now with between the courtroom and Trump's drama and the bad poll numbers that Biden is pulling in. Every damn election looks bleak. They seem to be bleaker and bleaker as the years go on, because Steve Kornacki has his big board and he's going to be there talking about county by county, and we're all going to be on the edge of our seats as the votes get counted into the wee hours of the night / the early hours of the morning. However, the responsibility still remains the same. Just like to our children, there's no greater responsibility to one another than it is to get out and vote. And, you know, we had some elections here recently in which the Republicans took a shellacking from the Democrats, and the Republicans thought they had some inroads, but it looks like reproductive rights is going to be a winner for the Democrats in the upcoming election, because the Republicans have separated themselves so far from even remotely center that folks are pushing back and saying, yo, I understand some people wanted this, but the majority of us did not. And I honestly think two things. First off, they didn't give a shit because they were really placating to their base. And they really didn't know. I think they really thought that there were more people out here that would support them and that push than actually came out to support them. But two, it could be a long game. It could have been they made this play now to figure out the parameters that they can come back to it once it eventually gets overturned in time and or it gets pushed back by enough states that when the states that they want to control, whatever those states are, they can craft new legislation to fall within the parameters that they've seen other people fall down to. So we'll see. You know, I don't put anything past the GOP. Look, don't like them, but them motherfuckers are smart. I got to give them their props. They are smart. I've given them their props in the fact that they stick to one another. They will fall on the sword if they need somebody to fall on the sword. Your boy, George Santos, they about to kick his ass out. Yo, we got enough drama with Trump. We don't need your ass. They about to kick his ass out. The vote fell earlier in the week, or was it late last week, it fell and kept him in, but he already announced that he wasn't going to run for re-election. So, I mean, what's the sense of him sticking around now, just giving them even more negative press? That just does not make any daggone sense to me. I don't see it. I could be wrong. Someone correct me if they have a difference of opinion. I just don't see it. Rodney, did you see that Colorado maintained Trump on the ballot even after the Article 14 challenge of the Constitution? Do you think any state will be successful in removing him from the ballot?
Yes, I do, as long as the people push for it to happen. Because the rationale that I heard for the failure was that this provision hasn't been exercised in the 14th Amendment since the Civil War era, and there's nothing written out on how it should happen. And what I find interesting about that is when we talk about the First, Second, and Fifth Amendment, we never use those types of things to justify it. As a matter of fact, what we say is only things that are enumerated in the Constitution, word for word, should be the law. Well, the law is pretty explicit in the 14th Amendment. And they say that they want the people to decide. Well, they don't say that about, again, the First, the Second, and the Fifth Amendment. They only say that about this particular amendment and the people. And this is the thing, the people have to push for it to happen, just like they push for the Supreme Court to have ethics, even though it's just on paper. It's a step. The people have to push for it, and yes, it will happen, even if I need to put forth a suit here in my state of Nevada to push it. I'm willing to do it.
The verbiage from the judge says that the judge believed that Donald Trump did incite the insurrection, but from what I read, did incite the insurrection, but did not. Brian, I got you back. But still did not feel that his name should be removed from the ballot. So I didn't dig deep into the case because it broke while I was tied up working. But I did see the highlights, and I read briefly on what had happened. It was startling to see that the judge actually did say in the brief that it was of the court's opinion that he did incite the riot. That's major. That's nothing to sneeze at. And the way Fannie Willis is burning on his heels, this is not a good time to be Donald J. Trump, you know, senior nor junior, to be honest with you. But I haven't followed much of the case in New York with respect to his businesses this week, because there hasn't been a lot of movement in that. You know, obviously testimony has continued, but there was no big revelations from that. But I don't want to forever get stuck on him as we have a political conversation, because there's enough to go around. Tuberville is still holding up in the Senate and refusing to let go of his grasp of military appropriations. The House did pass a stopgap bill for the governmental funding, so that's good. But it seems like the waters are souring already toward the new speaker. I'm sorry, go ahead, Rodney.
I just want to add this about what you said about the judge. What the judge said was, and what they're saying, they want the people to decide at the ballot box. Because if the judges do it, it'll be as if they took him off the ballot. The judges took him off the ballot. Yeah. We don't say that about the First, the Second, and the Fifth Amendment. As a matter of fact, we say just the opposite about the Second Amendment, because the majority of Americans want to ban ARs. I'm not one of them, but the majority of Americans want to ban ARs. They want to ban so-called assault weapons, right? They don't want people to have concealed and carry. The majority of Americans say that. But then we go back and say, but the court said it's okay for them to have it. So if there has to be a standard, and if that is the standard, then we need to go with the standard. So the judge saying on this particular issue, oh, no, this is one we want the people to decide. The judge is in that position. Matter of fact, his name is judge to make a determination. That's what he or she, I don't know which one it is supposed to do. So I just wanted to show the hypocrisy of that statement compared to how we deal with any other constitutional issue.
Well, I do want to say this because I feel like you guys, I did hear you guys talk about David Axelrod actually asking Joe Biden to step out of the race. And I feel like sometimes when we have conversations about Trump, we got to look at the other things, because I think that's pretty big for Axelrod to say, hey, I don't see a path for him to win. Maybe he needs to let somebody else run. I know we focus on Trump a lot, but that says that even the people from the Obama administration who had Biden a part of their cabinet, they see
the ticket,
issues
right
there. And so to me, I feel like that's a worthy conversation there, because if they're
I think Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just wanted to finish up and say, because to me that shows that there is a level of people kind of getting tired of what they're seeing from this president.
I think it's the opposite. I think it's what I've said a number of times. First off, his number two is whack and is weak. The other side of it is his age. So it's a one and two punch. The concern is he's old. No one since FDR has ever been that old and reelected. And I don't think FDR was that old. But anyhow, and then he does not have a viable number two. Now, I understand no one has ever had the greatest number two in the world. You're right. But they've at least been someone that the country looks at like, okay, well, you know, if everything fails, at least we got this motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? And Kamala just does not give any degree of that confidence. She does not scream any degree of that confidence. That's my issue with him. I was hoping, in all honesty and transparency, that he was going to launch and it was going to say Biden. And he would replace her at it, to be real. You know what I'm saying? Because he needs to. She is a huge weight around his neck. Huge weight around his neck. Cause she, I look, again, we can have this discussion, and okay, we'll table it. We'll have it next week. We can have this discussion about who has been a great one and what they've done, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're absolutely right. But at least, even with the Obama and Joe, what you got from Joe with Obama was Joe had that national security and international affair piece to it. What you got from Dick Cheney was he was going to be your hammer. Might not have liked him, but he was going to be the hammer. He was going to be the one that got out there and said, look, y'all mofos don't get in line, then it is going to be a problem. And he was going to keep names and make it a problem for you. What you got out of Al Gore was a younger version, a younger man, whom, at worst, was going to get you through a year or two if anything happened to Clinton, and then you could vote his ass out. I'm just keeping it 100. But that's what you've gotten in recent years. Trump and who was Trump's VP? Pence. Okay, you might not like Pence. You may not like him at all, but at least he was a governor of a state. So at least you knew he had some leadership quality, something to fall back on. And yes, Rodney, to your point that you put in the chat, they said the same thing about Obama a year out, that he was going to get walloped, and he messed around and won. A year is an eternity in an election cycle, but they're not only looking at that. Again, I go back to where I started. They're looking at Kamala, and they're looking at his age, and that's what has them the most nervous. Yeah, and the fact that someone is going to step out and give him an actual primary challenge is an indicator that the party is not in full alignment. You're right. But I don't think it's anything to really be worried about, to be in my humble opinion. You know, Rashi, you got any final thoughts? We only have 5 minutes left.
Well, in highlighting political talk is, we do have a lot of shit that's going to happen. And I'm still waiting on, you can't hear me?
I hear you now.
And I'm still waiting on Stacey Abrams to make her bid for presidency so I can rest at night. Other than that, I want everyone who knows a child or someone who's in the education process to go up to that person and ask them, what can we do to help? What can I personally do to help you learn, help you grow educationally, and help you achieve something academically? Because until we make this a global social issue, there'll be no change. Every individual who knows a learner right now, especially if they lifelong, make sure you support lifelong learning, but get yourself a person who's learning and help support their process if you can.
Gotcha. Brother Barry, you got anything to closing out with?
I do. Next Friday, we're dropping the commercial for the 12 Watch app. We are offering people early subscriptions at $47.88. I'm hoping I can get a commitment from my folks that's online, Sister Rashid, Brother Lee, as well as Brother Rodney, in support. We buy $47.88 for individual, $119.99 for a family of four. So we're going to start this process on into the launching of the app. People get QR codes, emails, and the whole nine. And you also enter into a contest for 12 Watch merch. We're giving over 100 packages away of 12 Watch merch, from hoodies to hats to pajamas to windbreakers. So, yep, that's what we are.
All right. That's what's up. And we'll talk about that off air, no doubt. Brother Rodney, you got anything to add?
Yes. Please read the newspaper, read a regular book, read a comic book in front of your child, and do it every day. Do it multiple days of the week. There you go.
Okay. And what you got to say after that? There ain't nothing to say. You know, he broke it down so it can forever be broken. Look, I want to thank everybody that joined us live and later, the callers, the guests. Again, this was definitely a worthwhile conversation to be had. I am grateful that you all made it today because your boy is done, you hear me? But I'm going to get out here. I'm going to celebrate with my niece and uplift her. Then I'm going to ride my ass back to this room, crawl in this bed, and be out. But until then, we love you all. And a damn thing you can do about it. So next week, peace. Thank you.